Reading from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, verse 4. And I'll read a couple of different versions so you get a taste of the meaning. Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, verse 4. And I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is the result of a rivalry between a man and his neighbor. This too is vanity and striving after wind. Different version. Again, I saw that for all toil and every skillful work, a man is envied by his neighbor. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. And different translation again. Then I saw that all toil and all skill in work come from one person's envy of another. This also is vanity and chasing after them. So what Solomon is saying, we look at what someone else has or does, I want that. And unless we see or hear something first, we do not really feel a need for it, because need is a different from want, isn't it? How many of you have a ringtone on your mobile phone? Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. The first mobile phones did not have ringtones, they just rang. No. Ring, ring. Because, you know, they all sounded the same. And at that time, nobody really was bothered or worried about all phones sounding the same. No? And everyone was okay with it. No one thought, oh, I'm really unhappy about this. That I have just a ring. Wouldn't it be great to have a ringtone? Internet, for some of us who are, let's say, a bit more mature, more than 30 years old, at the time when there was no internet, did any of us miss internet when it didn't exist?
No.
Yeah. Were we really unhappy saying, I wish there was such a thing as internet, and I'm so unhappy that it doesn't exist? Nobody was unhappy about it. It didn't exist, nobody felt the need for it, I was missing it. Nowadays we cannot survive without internet. Our internet connection is poor or slow. It's very hard to cope with that, isn't it? And, you know, how many of us would make it through just 1 week without Facebook or WhatsApp, social media, internet in general? Yes. Somebody just volunteered to go media fasting for a whole week. No TV, no radio, no internet. Well, we as human beings are very inventive. Of course we are, because we are made in God's image and He is the creator. But we invent things that we do not need, and then we convince people that we do need it, but we don't really need it. And this is the heartbeat of the Western consumer society. And the end result is, we increase all these things that we don't need, and at the same time we increase our stress levels, and just add more things to our life that we will worry about, that we don't really need. The 10th commandment, something quite different about it, says that we shall not desire our neighbor's possessions. Our society is built on the very opposite idea. You shall desire your neighbor's possession, and you will do whatever you can, as much overtime you can, anything you can, so that you will be able to match your neighbor and compete with your neighbor. That's very opposite to the 10th commandment. In Romans chapter 7, Paul says, for I would not have known covetousness unless the law had said, you shall not covet. But sin, taking opportunity by the commandment, produced in me all manner of evil desire. So when Paul says, what a wretched man I am, and what a sinner I am, he is not really talking about his behavior, his external conduct. According to the external standard, he said he was blameless. according to the laws of Pharisees and the Jewish tradition and ceremonies, he was blameless. I was blameless, Paul says, until I met Christ. Then he realized that something was wrong with him internally, not externally. So when Paul says, "What a wretched man I am," in Romans chapter 7, "I do what I don't want to do, I don't do what I want to do," he's not saying, "I'm getting drunk, I'm gambling, I'm promiscuous, I live immoral life." No, he's not saying that. Because he said himself, according to the external standard, he was blameless. In Romans 7, he is talking specifically and only about the Ten Commandments. That's what he quotes from the law, doesn't he? He doesn't quote all the commandments. It's, "For the law had said, you shall not covet." That's where he starts. "But sin, taking the opportunity by the commandment, produced in me all manner of evil desire." So Paul is talking here about something internal. The inner desires, the feelings that we have, things that nobody can see, only God. Just because we physically don't commit adultery or murder, this does not mean that we are blameless. Simply the way we feel about some people. Paul realized this as far as breaking commandments, physically and externally. That is in God's eyes because you can see inside of us. And Jesus said the same thing on the Sermon on the Mount, didn't he? You know, just because you don't murder or commit adultery, you're still inside, you're still doing wrong. Almost 1,000 years ago, a Christian author said that if we desire to commit wrong, or even plan to do something, but through circumstances we do not get the opportunity to physically do it and act it out, because of circumstances, even though in human eyes we haven't done anything wrong, in God's eyes we have still committed sin. Even if we did not have the opportunity to do it externally. And then we come back to Solomon, who was a keen observer of human nature, and who realized that all human effort, basically everything we do in this life, says it's based on one principle, and the principle is competition or rivalry, which is intimately linked with envy or covetousness. So I read it again, Ecclesiastes 4:4, three different translations. "And I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is the result of rivalry between a man and his neighbor. This too is vanity and striving after him. Again, I saw that for all toil and every skillful work, a man is envied by his neighbor. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Then I saw that all toil and all skill in work come from one person's envy of another. This also is vanity and a chasing after wind." And if you start right at the beginning and ask the question, why did Cain kill Abel? Because of the same thing, rivalry and competition. Why are there wars in the world? And why the wars will never end? James says, for the same reason. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? So Paul realized that sin is internal, it's centered in our hearts. It lives in us, he says. It's not something we do, it lives in us. It's like terminal cancer and incurable dementia. We can only manage it, we cannot cure it, we can only manage it on a daily basis. It will not go away. So we struggle with sin like with cancer. And then we stop struggling, because sin is also like dementia. We keep forgetting. We keep forgetting. And we need to be constantly reminded that we have to fight and struggle against it. That is why Jesus included the statements like, "Forgive us our sins and deliver us from the evil one." on a daily basis. And it is good to know that God is forgiving. Because He wouldn't tell us to pray to God to forgive us if He was not forgiving, because He would not forgive us then if He was not. As we struggle against sin and the devil, what chance would any of us stand if God was not forgiving? Good thing Jesus told us the parable of the prodigal son, so that we may know what our Heavenly Father is like. So in reflecting upon this specific problem, Solomon gives us a practical advice. Ecclesiastes 4 verse 6, so that's not the next verse, but one after. Ecclesiastes 4 verse 6, he says, better is a handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. A different translation. One hand full of rest is better than two fists full of labor and striving after wind. And another translation. Better a handful with quietness than both hands full together with toil and grasping for the wind. James says, you desire all these things and you end up quarreling and fighting. That's where it comes from our desires. And of course, the wise Solomon was the one to figure these things out 1,000 years before. This life is vanity, he says. All human effort and work is based on the principle of competition. Comparison competition that is linked with envy. We don't have to have all these things, Solomon says. He tried it all. Tried all things. Both of our hands full of stuff. It is better to just have a handful and to live in peace than to strive for wind, to grab more stuff, more power, and end up in all kinds of quarrels and fights. And of course, the apostles were not immune to this either. Master, which one of us will sit at your right hand and which one at your left hand? Master, which one of us is the greatest? That's our human nature, our condition, that we cannot change. We can only manage it on a daily basis. And Solomon is giving us some practical advice here. And his advice is how to deal with it and manage it on a daily basis. Keep things simple, he says. Keep things simple. How do we keep things simple? For me to keep this simple, I'll just give you one example. If you give me more than one, that's not simple anymore, is it? So just one example. We live in a world of information revolution, or more correctly, information explosion and overload. And sometimes we use this word virtual. You know the word virtual? Some of us know what it means, virtual. When we speak about information as if it exists in some sort of immaterial realm, some sort of platonic realm that doesn't really affect the physical world. And sometimes you used to get these emails, go green, don't print this out, please download the file instead or the attachment. And this statement is somewhat misleading. Because did you know that sending one email with an attachment uses the same amount of electricity as a light bulb? Not an LED one, the old-fashioned one, the warm one, the light bulb. And where do you think internet is? Hiding in some invisible realm? There's actually an entire country on this planet, in the manner of speaking, that's called the internet. It's out there, it's actually called data centers, and each one is housing thousands and tens of thousands of computers. And you know, these computers work non-stop, they don't ever switch off. And they get very, very hot. Very, very hot. That's why they all have fans, but because there are so many of them, they have to have some kind of mega air conditioning system to constantly cool them so that they don't break. And of course, because you have to back up all the information so you don't lose it, you know, losing all of your virtual money, your virtual account, you have to have a backup. So you double up the power usage. And why do I say that internet or data centers are an entire country? Well, this information is old, it's about 3 years old. All data centers that store internet information in the world, these power consuming warehouses in the whole world, when put together, they use 40% more electricity than UK in a year, an entire country. And more than this entire country. And this is a statistic, this is a couple of years old, and I tried to find the recent information from this year. You just can't find it. They're probably too scared to share it. Because, you know, each year data grows more and more, and needs more space and more power, and information can only grow more and more. So now, in 2019, data centers must be using even more. I don't know, this is a bit of a guess, but perhaps England and France, UK and France together in a year, probably the same amount. Virtual internet. So internet is not a virtual, immaterial space. Every time you send an email with an attachment, it's like putting a standard light bulb on it. It also, email has to be stored somewhere, and it has to be backed up somewhere else. So it doubles the amount of power, electricity that runs that server, computer, in data center, that also has to be cooled 24 hours a day. The question is, do you really need to keep on a server that email that you sent to your friend 10 years ago? Picture of a cat playing piano? Do you really need to keep that on? Well, keep it and keep polluting the earth. Of course, we all drive and we pollute the environment. But we know about that, so we make engines more efficient. And we all throw stuff away. But we know about that, we can see it with our eyes, so we recycle things. But not many people are aware of data, information, internet caused pollution. Internet, email, social media, they don't run on air, on virtual power. It runs on coal, uranium, plutonium, all this nasty stuff. So, if you remember that email you sent, funny cat playing a piano 10 years ago, you know, maybe it's time to delete that. This is just an old email attachment, one light bulb. I'll leave it to your imagination to figure out how much the recent images that we make that are growing in resolution, high resolution images, pictures on Facebook, how much more power they use than just an email. Never mind the videos and high resolution videos that we post and keep on social media. Even more power. And on YouTube, you put some videos of people watching TV and somebody else on TV sitting on the sofa watching TV, and who wants to watch that? But there are all kinds of rubbish out there that is not recycled. That is our present condition. And we are already conditioned and prepared for the world that is around the corner, that is coming. The brave new world. The world called 1984 by George Orwell. And should we just uncritically welcome this world with open arms and embrace it? Or should we try and keep two shovels apart? And this world is getting overcomplicated, and our lives will get overcomplicated if we just go with the flow. And it seems to me that we are nearing the time when we will not be able to think anymore without the help of a computer processor, or even make decisions without the help of a computer processor or a machine. Because we cannot handle all the information that comes our way on a daily basis. It's not exactly the Terminator, but it is taking over our lives in a more subtle manner. And unless we choose to intentionally simplify our lives, we will be swept away with the torrents of useless information that is taking our time away from things that really matter in life. When Jesus fed the crowds, he chose to feed them with simple things, just bread and fish. He could have fed them with a 7-course meal, he had the power to do that. He could have taught people all the science and knowledge about the world, but he chose to use his short time on earth to focus on a few simple things, to live it out and to teach it and to share it. So he really gives us the essence of life. I mean, he knows all the other stuff, but he gives us the simple things, the essence of life, things that really matter. It may be just a handful, as Solomon says, but it comes with peace rather than conflict or strife. And according to the wisdom of Solomon and Jesus and Paul and James, they all teach the same principle. Paul says, if you have food to eat and clothes to wear, you should be content. And I have learned to be content whether I have little or a lot. That's what he says. And this principle of simplicity is threaded through the entire Bible. It is the key to minimizing our stress and worry. The key to bringing down our conflicts and quarrels. And we may want much, because there is a pressure for us to want much, but we don't need much. This is true regarding material things, but also spiritual things. Jesus says you just need faith that is the size of a mustard seed. You don't need to complicate things. It is enough. Simplicity is one of the keys to peace and happiness. And this principle has been established at the time of the creation, and it is meant to remain with us forever. The way God designed us to live in the beginning, the way we were meant to consume food and work, was all really, really simple. In reflecting upon all these things in life, Solomon concludes, he observes our situation and he gives us advice. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 4 and 6. And I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is the result of a rivalry between a man and his neighbor. This too is vanity. Striving after wind. Better a handful with quietness than both hands full together with toil. Grasping for the wind.